Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, friends, and welcome to Open Book, your weekly spiritual book club. I'm Lori Strong, and with me, as always, is my good friend Alice Shelton. Hi, Alice.
Hi, Lori.
Well, here we are on December 23rd to wish all of you a merry and blessed Christmas. And I can't think of a better way to celebrate than with this short story by Annie Dillard entitled God in the Doorway. Alice, would you like to start reading the story?
I would be pleased to. One cold Christmas Eve, I was up unnaturally late because we had all gone out to dinner. My parents, my baby sister, and I. We had come home to a warm living room and Christmas Eve. Our stockings drooped from the mantle. Beside them, a special table bore a bottle of ginger ale and a plate of cookies. I had taken off my fancy winter coat and was standing on the heat register to bake my shoe soles and warm my bare legs. There was a commotion at the front door. It opened, and cold wind blew around my dress. Everyone was calling me. Look who's here! Look who's here! I looked. It was Santa Claus, whom I never, ever wanted to meet. Santa Claus was looming in the doorway and looking around for me. My mother's voice was thrilled. Look who's here! I ran upstairs. Like everyone in his right mind, I feared Santa Claus, thinking he was God. I was still thoughtless and brute, reactive. I knew right from wrong, but had barely tested the possibility of shaping my own behavior, and then only from fear, and not yet from love. Santa Claus was an old man whom you never saw, but who nevertheless saw you. He knew when you'd been bad or good. He knew when you'd been bad or good, and I had been bad.
My mother called and called, enthusiastic, pleading. I wouldn't come down. My father encouraged me. My sister howled. I wouldn't come down, but I could bend over the stairwell and see. Santa Claus stood in the doorway with night over his shoulder, letting in all the cold air of the sky. Santa Claus stood in the doorway, monstrous and bright, powerless, ringing a loud bell and repeating, Merry Christmas, Merry Christmas. I never came down. I don't know who ate the cookies. For so many years now, I have known that this Santa Claus was actually a rigged-up Miss White who lived across the street, that I confused the dramatis personae in my mind, making of Santa Claus, God, and Miss White an awesome, vulnerable trinity. This is really a story about Miss White. Miss White was old. She lived alone in the big house across the street. She liked having me around. She plied me with cookies, taught me things about the world, and tried to interest me in finger painting, in which she herself took great pleasure. She would set up easels in her kitchen, tack enormous, slick, soaking papers to their frames, and paint undulating undersea scenes, horizontal smears of color sparked by occasional vertical streaks, which were understood to be fixed kelp. Mm-hmm. I liked her. She meant no harm on earth, and yet half a year after her failed visit as Santa Claus, I ran from her again. That day, a day of the following summer, Miss White and I knelt in her yard while she showed me a magnifying glass. It was a large, strong hand lens. She lifted my hand and, holding it very still, focused a dab of sunshine on my palm. The glowing crescent wobbled, spread, and finally contracted to a point. It burned. I was burned. I ripped my hand away and ran home crying. Miss White called after me, sorry, explaining, but I didn't look back. Even now I wonder, if I meet God, will he take and hold my bare hand in his and focus his eye on my palm and kindle that spot and let me burn? But no, it is I who misunderstood everything and let everybody down. Miss White, God, I am sorry I ran from you. I am still running, running from that knowledge, that I, that love which, from which there is no refuge. For you meant only love and love, and and I felt only fear and pain. So once in Israel, love came to us incarnate, stood in the doorway between two worlds, and we were all afraid. Well, listeners, this relatively simple childhood memory does reveal a lot about its author, and it brings up some questions for spiritual-minded people. Here's one to start off. Alice, have you ever experienced a moment of God in the doorway in which you turned away? Could you describe it for us?
Oh, wow. I find it interesting that we're discussing doorways because I was hoping maybe next year we could really focus on doorways a lot because of the way the Pope opened the, or will be opening the Year of Mercy next year, which I think is kind of cool. So doorways
are
cool. Well, I'm trying to think of a big event, like a big time event in life. I can kind of remember an event where I felt very disappointed in God, which isn't exactly... I'm going to go there, and then we'll kind of go from there. I can remember being in second grade, and I wrote a paper, which, you know, was probably one page, five sentences or something. I had to write a paragraph. And one of my brothers colored all over it. So I was very upset by this, and I didn't discover it until late at night, and I didn't have time to redo it, and so I went to bed. And I remember praying that God would take away all the crayon marks from my paper so that I could turn it in and I wouldn't get in trouble. And when I woke up in the morning, I remember going to the paper with full expectation that it would have been miraculously put back to its original, you know, place and way, and it wasn't. And I have this profound, I mean, I kind of remember like looking up in the sky saying, Why wouldn't you have taken care of this for me? You know, I believed in you, and you have let me down, you know? So not exactly a doorway, but certainly a pretty young person's awareness of that God's not magic, that, you know, getting angry. I don't really remember being angry at God in my life very much, but I remember being very angry that day.
Now, see, I would say if I had... it wasn't really a moment for me either. I would say it was more of a period of turning away. And it was right out of college. I was, you know, had the whole new career thing going. I was really stressed out, so I just kind of put my head down and I worked really hard and kind of ignored God's multiple attempts to steer me back into the light. Because I thought, okay, I'm being an adult, and when you're an adult, you swallow your unhappiness. And, you know, so I was being very successful business-wise, but my spiritual life had just withered to nothing because I had cut myself off from not just God, but from life-giving people and things.
Yeah.
And it really took a long time to get back out of that cycle.
Yeah. You know, I've had similar experiences. Some of them have been... because a particular priest left a parish I was in and I felt angry about that. Or because a particular priest who I really didn't connect with or didn't like or respect or whatever. And I have let that get in the way of my relationship with God sometimes. One of the things my spiritual director is working with me on, I'm kind of doing spiritual direction with the Ignatian practices involved in it. And so, you know, watching how different practices at times are drawing me to God, and then even the same practice sometimes is drawing my focus away from God, and how you're just trying to be attentive to that, that, you know, all things can be both of God and not of God, depending on how much you're attached to them and all those things. So that's just kind of interesting.
Cool. Well, why do you think we do that? Why do you think we turn away from God? What are we afraid of?
I think we're afraid of, I'm afraid of having to let go of things I like to do. I'm afraid of, you know, I can honestly say, I'm not sure I'm all that afraid of judgment, which doesn't really sound very good, but I think I'm afraid that I'm going to have to make hard choices. I'm afraid to see myself sometimes, to be perfectly honest, Lori. You know, sometimes... when God speaks to me through the honesty of another person or whatever, it's like, no, I don't want to face that about myself.
Yeah. See, now that's I really relate to that. I keep thinking it's almost like God turns the spotlight on you, and you know,
yeah,
there you are in all your, you know, humanity and imperfection, and we'd rather hide, I think, in our own sinfulness, which in a way is cozy in that it is familiar, you know?
Yeah.
It's not... I don't know. Maybe it's just that feeling of a love that is so all-knowing and so all-forgiving that how can that possibly be?
Well, yeah. And I mean, can you relate to just this general feeling of unlovableness? I mean,
sure.
You know, do I think I'm a good person? Yeah. But, you know, I know my warts and all the inside thoughts I have and all the doubts and all those things. And I sometimes think, why would anyone love me? I mean, I think that about my husband. Sometimes I think, oh, I am such a wretched soul sometimes. But so in some ways, I think if I have a really big area to work on within myself, it's to really accept and trust in how much God does love me. And I try sometimes to talk myself through, you know, what does God see when God looks at me? And, you know, it's interesting, huh? Do you do that?
I do. And I think it is. It's super hard. Because even if I'm trying, well, you know, here are my good points, I still feel like kind of mealy-mouthed about it and crummy and, you know, all sort of, why should I even think about good things about myself? You know, it's a tough thing to do.
Yeah. It's much easier for me to see the good things in other people and be able to articulate those to other people. But for some reason within myself, even when I'm finding strengths, I'm finding fault and I'm, you know, undercutting the praise or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like working against yourself.
It's a fine line. I mean, it's a fine line, though, between to live with humility and to live with genuine, you know, genuine ability to acknowledge, yes, I have that quality, I have that gift, I have that skill, but also that gift is not from me. It's given through me, you know?
Yeah. Well, what do you think about this poor Miss White in the story? Can you think of anybody in your life that, you know, felt that had that kind of an effect on you, that you didn't love maybe the way you should have? I can't think of personally a single person, but I can think of her as sort of an amalgam of a lot of different people that were well-meaning and loving and offered me good things. But for some reason at the time, I just didn't feel I clicked with them. There was just something about them that was wrong for me at the time. I don't know. But once you miss that, I find myself looking back and thinking, boy, you really don't get second chances on that kind of thing.
Yeah. You know, I would say I have, and I'm with you, it's like an amalgamation of a blend of different people.
Mm-hmm.
But I can certainly look at situations where I didn't read a situation well or didn't really understand that someone was reaching out to me, or I was not comfortable with who they were at that time in my life or whatever. And so I just let an opportunity go by. And I think in some ways that's kind of the same thing. You just kind of, you let a relationship that could have blossomed into a good friendship or whatever just kind of go for whatever reason. You walk on by or... in fact, you know, here's an admission. I was at a bookstore today doing some Christmas shopping, and I saw out of the corner of my eye someone that I knew. But I know this person is not short-winded, if you will.
Yes, I know.
And I just was not in a place.
Yeah.
I just was not in a place where I wanted to get into a long conversation. So I just had a third corner. And, you know, that could have been a very wonderful visit, and who knows what path my life could have taken if I hadn't turned that way. But, and I do that with God, Lori. I mean, because my office is so close to the college's chapel, I am frequently beckoned to that chapel, and I say, okay, in 5 minutes, God, let me finish this, or, you know, and then I'll get sidetracked and do something else. So I try really hard when that feeling is strong to just get up and go, you know.
Yeah.
But it's hard. Okay, I do want to say this. What was the deal with Miss White? That was like burning ants, what she did.
Yeah, she was probably just trying to demonstrate how light, you know, refracts down and that, you know, whatever, and didn't mean to actually burn the little girl.
Yeah.
Just to show
her
the heat.
Yeah.
She had good intentions, I think.
Well, I think so. We like to hope so.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about some more pleasant things. Go back to your childhood. What did you think about Santa Claus? Were you afraid of him at all? Were you one of those kids?
I don't remember being afraid of Santa Claus. But I don't remember when I found out that Santa Claus was not real. But I don't remember being afraid. I remember being afraid of, like, I was more afraid of, like, priests at Christmas time than I was Santa Claus.
Really?
Yeah, I don't know why. Maybe because some of them that would visit our house were, you know, kind of bigger, booming-voiced people. But I remember my mom really liking Christmas and really being happy and laughing. And so I guess I probably identified that with Santa Claus. Were you afraid of Santa?
No, not at all. In fact, there's a picture of me. Probably I'm about to turn 4 or 5, and my Uncle Paul has come in dressed as Santa Claus. And there I am, gabbing away, hands, of course, gesturing madly. And, yeah, so happy to be talking to Santa Claus. And I contrast that with when my niece Alexandra was about the same age. Actually, she was a little younger. She was about 3. My father-in-law got dressed up as Santa Claus and came in the house to surprise her. And his own dog didn't know who it was. But Alexandra just kind of crossed her arms and gave him this look. And then later on when he came back in, she said, "You were Santa Claus."
Aww.
He wasn't fooled in the least.
Oh, wow. Now, I have a good memory of not when I was a child, but my husband John dressed as Santa for my nieces and nephews when they were really little and some other kids in my sister's neighborhood. And I was outside the house watching when he went in and watching the children interact. And he said that was one of the most magical experiences of his life, to play Santa, because those kids really believed. I mean, there was no child in that room who thought it was Uncle John. And he just really played it up and just had a ball with it. And he still talks about it. It's really interesting.
Yeah, that's neat.
Yeah.
Can you remember when you were a kid, was there something that was always at the top of your wish list?
Oh, I just always wanted my aunts to get me clothes that fit.
Oh, no.
Oh, I just
did they
know.
Not?
No. I mean, I it was just awful because my mom would never let us tell them, so we could never take them back. So for a lot of time, Lori, I would, like, get gifts that I never could use because they would not buy the right sizes and stuff. So, I mean, I've told you before, I think, it's hard. I'm not a very it's hard for me to receive gifts. I don't know why.
It is?
But it's hard for me. In some situations, like when you mailed me that gift, I was delighted like a child's delighted. But sometimes it's really hard for me. It's really hard for me from my husband. And it's hard for him to find things I like. So, yeah, it's kind of funny. I don't know.
That's
my love
funny.
Language is not gifts.
Oh. See, I was a cheap date. I always, number one on my wish list every year was paper. You know, paper for writing and paper for drawing and painting.
Oh,
always.
Yeah, if my husband would just buy me some crayons or some markers or really beautiful paper or cards or stationery, that kind of stuff, I can't get enough of it. Notepads. Oh, you and I are really alike in that. Isn't that funny?
Yes, it's funny. Well, can you think of any other favorite Christmas memories? I'm going to just go ahead because my birthday, as you know, is Christmas Day.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, somebody once said, "Are you a cradle Catholic?" And I said, well, I was born 5 weeks early on Christmas Day. My mother went into labor during Mass. I was born at a Catholic hospital and named after a priest. What do you think?
You were named after a priest?
Yes, Father Lawrence Smith.
Oh,
at
I didn't
Saint
know
Hospital.
That. Oh,
yeah,
wow.
Yeah. He prayed for all of his. He was always trying to convince mothers to name their children after him because he loved St. Lawrence so much. And he prayed for us every day, and gave Mass every Christmas Day. Mass was for us. He was a great guy. He was hilariously funny.
Oh, that's great.
Well, anyway, because of that, well, my mother's birthday, I should say, is 2 days after mine. And she grew up getting, you know, the combination gift. So she never let that happen to me. And while I always thought it was already special having my birthday on Christmas because, you know, you went to church, you never had to go to school, everybody got dressed up, everybody was really happy. She always went out of her way to do extra things. Like, you know, you kind of have to have Christmas dinner, you know, the standard things. But she would try to sneak one thing in there that I particularly liked.
Oh,
or,
you
know, she'd make my favorite cake.
I was going to say, did you have birthday cake instead of pie or something?
Well, we'd have Christmas in the morning, and usually we'd go over to, you know, relatives' house or they would come over to ours. But after that, in the late afternoon, which is when I was born anyway, we'd have my birthday with cake and the whole deal.
Oh, that's nice.
And I really appreciate that she tried to make it even more special, which I was never expecting because I already thought it was special enough.
Yeah. Well, that's kind of nice because you're one of the very few, well, in fact, you're the only person I know who has a birthday on or near Christmas who feels that it's very special because most people are like, yeah, it was an afterthought, you know. People always gave me the dual gift.
No, I always felt it was special. And, you know, it was nice never, ever, ever having to go to school on your birthday.
Yeah. Well, and people don't forget your birthday when it's on a big day.
No, they don't.
Oh, that's cool.
Can you think of any special Christmas memories from youth?
My grandfather, my dad's dad, was a carpenter, and he made us a beautiful three-story rolling dollhouse that was like a great big, immaculately detailed colonial home. I mean, it had a fire, it had a chimney. It was really, really neat. It had doors that opened and closed. And
wow.
Yeah, and he didn't make the furniture, but he found all the miniature furniture, and it was really a beautiful gift. And we were probably, you know, a little bit too little to really appreciate it and take care of it as we should have. In fact, John asked me the other day where it was, and I said, oh, who knows? I mean, who knows at this point where it was? But where it is, I'm sure it's gone. But that, I mean, I can close my eyes and think about that gift. Isn't that funny? I also can remember the year that we were given a choice by my dad that our family gift could be either a microwave oven or a VCR or a computer. And both at that time were probably $600 or $700, you know, or whatever the price was at that time. They were both very extravagant gifts. And we picked the VCR or the whatever the TV thing was. We gave the computer, Dad, nobody's ever going to need a computer.
Oh.
So that's kind of funny to think about that.
That's hilarious.
Have you ever had a gift of the Magi Christmas? Did we kind of talk about this when we did that story?
Yeah. Yeah. I can't think of a particular instance where it was that apropos, you know, like literally cut off your hair and you get the comb or whatever.
Yeah.
But I always felt so sorry for my poor little brother because he had to buy two presents for me, two presents for my mother, two presents for my sister, whose birthday is exactly 2 weeks after mine, January 8th. So I feel for him now, that poor little boy, saving up dimes and nickels to buy all these presents at Christmas time.
Yeah, that is, I mean, that's a lot for a little kid. It was sweet. I got a text from my oldest nephew today asking me a question about something that is about his mom's gift, and did I know this one place that she liked to go for da da da. And I just thought, oh, how sweet that they're finally, you know, I used to schlep them around to buy, forcibly make them buy gifts for their parents, and, you know, when they were little, it ranged from soap on a rope or some ridiculous, you know.
Oh, yeah.
But now it's nice that they know on their own that they have to figure that out, so that's kind of cool. Well, what about this? What was a really challenging Christmas memory for you?
Challenging. Last year was challenging because it was a big birthday for both of us, as we know, turning 50.
Yeah.
And I wasn't going back home to California, as my father had passed.
Yeah.
And I think it was, yeah, it was just more personal stuff, not anything outside, not something extraneous, but something just from within myself was a little tough to overcome.
Yeah. Yeah. That's any Christmas that where I felt that way, it's been that. It's been personal stuff inside. We went away the first Christmas after my mom died, and that was a big mistake.
Really?
I should have been here with my aunts and uncles. Yeah. In fact, my sister, dear one that she was, worked ahead and got my two nephews and her husband, and she wrote really nice notes to me to open on Christmas when I opened my gifts from them, just saying, you know, we know this is going to be a hard Christmas for you to be away from the family. And so that was really, I mean, it ended up, that was a nice memory of it, but that was a really hard Christmas.
Yeah.
Very hard Christmas. But,
go ahead.
Well, I was just going to ask you what your normal church attendance is on Christmas. Do you normally go to midnight mass or morning or what?
We will go, our parish will have 5 o'clock and 8 o'clock, and we'll usually go to the later of the two. We don't do midnight, but we always used to go Christmas morning when I was a kid, as far as I can remember.
Yeah, that's what I can remember too. I don't remember going at midnight until I was probably in college.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Well, that's a strange note to end on, but I think we're going to end on that. And friends, that's our show for this week. And we hope that you have a very happy holiday. We'll be back next week. Until then, if you're looking for God, just open a book.
Have a great holiday.